When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Homesteading Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Thornbrew, and I'm joined today by...
your co-host, Rachel Jameson.
Hey, Rachel. Rachel and I just finished our members pre-show. That's something we're going to start doing when we do our shows together. And it's just going to be like a half an hour or so of time we spend with our members of Patreon and our membership. Members, where we just do a little extra for them. And if you want to know more about that, you can check out the links for our membership or for Patreon and hear that little extra where we talk about our homesteads and some things we're doing and maybe our recommendations and just whatever we feel like talking about for that half an hour or so. So yeah, I thought we had a pretty good little pre-show there.
Yeah, it was fun. You get to get a little bit more personal side of Harold and I and hear about a little bit about what's going on. So I hope that people come on over.
Mostly just cold weather right now, though.
Yeah, lots of complaints about the cold weather. It's funny because I do listen to a couple of other people's podcasts, obviously. And that's what everybody's talking about right now is being cold.
The hot topic is the cold weather.
That's yeah, right. Yeah, it is. It's cold and brutal. And people, people are freezing and freezing pipes, everything.
Oh, yeah.
Else.
So. Yeah, it's crazy. Well, we like to think about better times. We like to think about growing gardens. And today we're going to talk about something that I think is on a lot of people's minds because of the world and the way the world is. A lot of people get into homesteading. Some people get in for health reasons. Some people get into it for the love of the lifestyle. Some people get into it because they feel like it's a necessity because of the way the times are. They just feel like it's really important to be growing some of their own food for a lot of reasons, but for one main reason, food security, having food on your table and not knowing if that's always going to be available at the grocery store and just to be able to have control over that and know that you're going to be able to feed your family no matter what's going on. So we thought today what we might talk about is planning a survival garden. Now, you've heard Rachel and I say many, many times, we're not doom and gloomers. Of course, we really like to look at the positive side of homesteading and gardening and whatnot. But the reality is, we've seen it in our lifetime to where grocery store shelves were pretty empty, and it was hard to get stuff. So I also do garden because I want to make sure there's food on my table for my family. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there are some foods and there are some things to consider when you're thinking about like a survival garden. It's been called different things in the past, like victory garden. That's really what a victory garden was, yeah, right? I mean, it's definitely a more mild term, but a lot of people use this term survival garden. So we thought we'd put it in there. But there are some things to consider when you're growing that type of a garden versus maybe just your average garden, especially if you're limited on space. If you're limited on space, you definitely have to lean more towards some certain things to grow if you want them to be available or have we get into what things you have to consider there. But, I think the definition of a survival garden is growing things that will supply your needs as far as caloric needs and nutritional needs.
Yeah.
In that area. So, and then you'll be able to feed your family and stay alive basically. And if you can't get any other food, so yeah, that's what that is.
Yeah. I think it's important to me. That's what a survival garden is. I love lettuce, all kinds of lettuce and greens and stuff like that. And they have a great place in the garden. But when you're talking about a survival garden, the return on your energy, it just isn't there as much as growing some of these more calorie dense crops that we're going to talk about. And not that you can't grow it, but if your space is limited and yeah. So,
yeah, I think it's important. I mean, it really hit home with me, like, you know, 3-4 years ago, when the world turned upside down. Right. I mean, it was like that year when I planted my garden, I definitely planted more what we would consider survival crops. I mean, I was thinking about it, you know, I'm thinking, well, what do I need to be putting in my, in the ground out here that's going to feed us? Yeah. And you know, I was that year, that first year, I don't think I planted anything because I just thought, oh, that looks fun. Everything I planted was with a purpose. I mean, I was thinking,
I planted so many potatoes that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Potatoes. That's the first year I grew corn on my homestead because I wasn't growing corn before that. And I was growing a lot more beans and squash and things.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about some of those things, breaking them down to what we believe are the better things. But there were things that I thought, these are things I can store easily. These are things that I can, you know, eat on year round and, you know, and keep us alive if push comes to shove. So it really hit home for me that year. Now I've definitely loosened the reins a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, same relax. Here. I usually every year I plant something, a few things that are fun or have a couple of experiments going on. But, you know, that year I didn't, it was serious. I mean, it was all serious. It was like, nope. No room for goofing around. This, if there's a corner, there's a potato in it.
Yeah. And it's still a portion of my garden. I still consider that. It's still something I definitely think these things have to be grown. And now, okay, here's these beds, these areas. I mean, these are definitely going to be like my survival foods. Now here's some room to more for culinary experimentation and whatnot. I mean, there's, you know, you definitely can branch out if you got more room, but I still like to fill my pantry with those things first. Mm-hmm. I mean, I try to consider those things. So it doesn't have to be your whole garden, but it should be a portion of your garden for sure. And for preparedness, I mean, you just don't know what's coming. Like I said, I don't like to always focus on that, but I don't like to close my eyes to it either and not think it's not, you don't want to think it's not possible because we know that it is, obviously. And
we're not doomsday preppers, but we like to be prepared homesteaders.
That's right. And I think that's a proper way to look at it as a homesteader. I think preparedness is a huge part of homesteading, and your garden plays a huge part in that. So that's what we're going to talk about today. I think one of the things, some things to consider first, we have to consider locations. Most of these considerations are the same as any other garden.
Yep.
You're considering sunlight, your soil quality, your water access, but you do consider some other things too. Protection, not just from animals, but maybe from people when it comes to a survival garden. And I think you put this in the notes, concealment. We might want to conceal our gardens and hide them a little bit.
I hate to say it. And, you know, we try not to be too negative, but you might need to consider that. You might need to consider that it needs to be concealed or maybe it, and especially, so say you live in an HOA and they don't really allow some things in your yard. You might have to plant some potatoes in along some flowers just to fool your HOA. So there's lots of reasons to conceal.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like I say, you don't have to maybe hide everything, but you might want to hide a portion of it, you know, not let people know you have so much in a situation like that. Again, it sounds weird to say that out loud almost, because I'm one for displaying my garden. I love just showing it to the world. I want everybody to see what I'm growing, you know, but it does make sense, especially maybe if you're in a bigger inner city, urban homesteading. That could be if things got tight, you could definitely see a garden getting kind of ravaged if things got weird, you know, the grocery store, people can't get food someplace. They're going to get it someplace, you know, if it means taking, yours. I mean, that's just a reality of the world. People are going to eat, they're going to try to eat. And if that means taking,
you had also written down protection, and, you know, we normally try to protect our gardens from pests, but you know, given the circumstances, or even because I have such a small area to grow in, it's definitely something you really want to ramp up and make sure you're really protecting from, like, pests. Some of my worst pests are neighbor dogs. From pests, from raccoons, from those kinds of things. So between the protection and the concealment are really pretty important when you're considering gardening for this topic.
Yeah. And one of the things too, and when it comes to like protection against pests, some there's a lot of people who would say, because this is a survival garden, you should be willing to go the extra mile to maybe not be completely organic to protect your crops. So you're guaranteed pretty much to have something. And it's a fine line to cross because
you're going controversial.
Yeah. Because it's a fine line to cross because I'm, you know, I got into this for health, number one, and I don't want that. You know, I don't want to use anything, but if you were going to go that route, you could definitely go with more mild type, maybe like seven dust or.
So you are you keeping that on hand then?
No, I don't. I'm not saying me. I'm talking about if I'm just saying if other people maybe felt like that extra step might be a way to go to guarantee a crop. It can. It really can. It. I mean, because I've been devastated by things that seven dust would have wiped out if I would have just done it, you know, but I didn't do it. I was like, I'd rather not have that than put that on my on my food.
Like squash bugs and potato beetles can just ravage.
And but you know, but there's some things you could that on the more mild end that you could do. And I'm not saying that I support that or think you should. I'm just saying if you're planting a survival garden and that is your main purpose, it might be something to consider because it will increase the, you know, the chance that you will have food on your.
It's definitely something to think about as you think about planting a garden.
Yeah.
So like if this is the reason you're planting a garden, it's definitely something you want to weigh in your mind what you want to do.
And I am leery of bringing it up because I don't want people to do it. I really don't. It's like, I there's so much of that bad in the world that I don't want people to do it. But I also know that I would rather eat something that's been treated with a mild pesticide than not eat, you know? So. Yeah. I mean, there's just a, what point do you say, okay, this is a good idea? I don't know. There probably is a line there. There is,
I think everybody's going to have to weigh that.
Yeah. Themselves. For me, it's not been, I've not felt so threatened by the fact that I might not have food on my table. Cause I've been able to put plenty of food up without using those things.
Yeah.
But if you were limited on space and it was the main reason you were growing and it was something that was potentially an issue in your area. Mm-hmm. Perhaps maybe it'd be smart to do that. I don't know. I don't want to even say it for sure because I know there's people are probably like, I can't believe he's even going there because it is something I'm pretty against.
I was surprised you said it.
I'm pretty against it, but I think you see where I'm coming from on it though.
Oh, I do. I totally see where you're coming from. And I'm thinking in my head, man, that would be a really hard, that would be really hard for me to do. I've worked so long and so hard to make my garden soil the way it is. And yet you don't want to, you have kids.
I see it. A good alternative is buy a whole bunch of netting and just net everything to where they can't get to it.
Okay. So that's what it's interesting you say that because we actually didn't write this in the notes. So when all of this happened, I think everybody knows what this is.
Yeah.
I went and bought a ton of row covers so I can cover my entire, almost, I think I have enough to cover my entire garden in row covers.
Yeah.
It is a pain to do it, but I was willing to do it. And that's how I actually kept my, that's how I kept the cabbage moths at bay the last 2 years. And it does work really well, but once things get, it has its own set of problems. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to think this through and you're doing this solely for a preparedness.
Preparedness,
you can start thinking about things like netting and row covers and low tunnels and maybe some high tunnels, stuff like that. Those definitely aren't concealed, but they certainly do help with bugs. I've used them.
They make a big, big difference. Yeah.
Yeah. And they extend your season on both ends. Mm-hmm. If you're from somewhere like I am, where I am. And then I also bought, and if you're in a warm place, I actually bought shade cloth so I could grow lettuces a little bit longer.
Yeah. Again, it's not necessary to take the, it's not really necessary to go the evil way. it's not, but it is easier. And it does increase your chances of putting food in your pantry. Yep. And so I wouldn't fault anybody for going there. If their reason for growing a garden is because they feel like times are going to get tough and they need a survival garden. I also don't necessarily condone it in the fact that I want you to do it. I'm not going to do it. It's like I said, right. It's why I bought the netting and the rope cover and all the things myself also. But you still get some damage. You still get some things being taken, you know, there's just no doubt about it. It happens, especially when it comes to things like trees. Like I don't treat my trees for these things. Well, I don't net my trees, you know, I don't net my fruit trees, and there's a lot of food there that gets destroyed by pests and things too. So, I mean, it's just, where do you want to go with it? How much of a guarantee do you want that you have something edible, you know, in tough times? It's important. I agree, but I've been working really hard for a decade now to not do those things and still have a productive harvest, you know, by getting my stuff in a position where it don't need those things. But if you're brand new and it's first year, second year garden, and you haven't had time to get there, but you feel really desperate, like you need food, I won't fault you. I wouldn't fault you for trying it. In that way, you could definitely go with more mild things like BT, you know, for caterpillars, which is
say there is some organic
that's even considered organic. I still don't even use that, but you could use right. that.
You and I are definitely on the side of the term better than organic. But there are some organic pesticides out there that are allowed under the organic label that you could use before you hop to something a little bit worse.
But you know, there's people who are more extreme than us that wouldn't use things like plastic netting and things because they say, oh, that microplastic is going to break down and get in your soil and things like that. There's people who are more extreme than us that would go and say we couldn't even use those things. And I'm definitely not there. I mean, there's a point where it's like, okay, it's not even practical now to really try to eliminate everything that can benefit you and put food in your pantry. So, now, beyond right location and considering all those things for concealment and protection and all the things, considering what to grow. Now, this is a question, the age-old question for every gardener. How do I know what to grow? Mm-hmm. I always start with one really important thing. Will I eat it?
Yeah. What do you like to put in your mouth?
Because if there's things I'm not going to eat, I don't see any sense in growing them, okay?
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you hate onions or you're allergic to onions, don't grow them.
I will never grow rutabagas again. It's a very productive crop. It's a very big vegetable. It's a root crop. It's a ton of food. I hate them. I hate them so bad. I will never grow them again.
That's funny. I love them.
I cannot find a way to cook them that I can eat them. They're okay. I tried like 5-6 different ways and every way had this nasty aftertaste that left in my mouth. I was like, I cannot eat these things. Funny. There's something about them. I can't stomach. And I had such high hopes because they are so productive. I mean, like I said, it's just, they're big and they mm-hmm. just give you a lot of food, a huge root crop, you know? And to me, they grow easier than potatoes or turnips or anything. They grew so easy. I had so many of them 1 year.
Did they? I have not tried to grow them and I want to try to grow them. So, and that's the thing too, is we said, grow what you like to eat. Now, if you like to eat Cheez-Its and I don't know, Twix candy bars, you might have to start growing some things you don't like to eat and change your taste buds.
Yeah. You know, that's true. Your taste buds will adapt.
Yeah.
To different foods. I found that with the grass fed meats. Really big
they
because like they
difference.
Taste so different and like you have to like almost put your taste buds into submission until you start liking it better because you're so used to meat tasting a certain way that when you start eating grass fed beef, for example, it's like it tastes a little different and maybe not even quite as desirable for us. Now I love it. It took me a while before my body
chicken is that way. It can be pasture a little chicken. Bit tougher.
Heritage turkey is the same way I find. Yeah. It's doesn't taste the same and it just has a different taste, you know? And it's like, maybe you don't even crave that taste at first, but your taste buds will adapt to it and then you'll actually crave it and like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So you might have to change your taste buds a little bit, but there are, you know, almost everybody likes some of these vegetables we're going to talk about. That's why part of why you would want to grow them. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to go to the next one. Something that grows prolifically, something that grows a lot of what it grows and grows easy. I mean, I think that's important because you don't want to try to force something
that
doesn't grow well in your zone. You don't want to try to And this is a survival garden. This means that it needs to grow well without a lot of input, you know? So you want something that's going to give you a lot of food for little effort and, you know, a fairly secure guarantee that it's going to produce for you in a big way.
Yeah, because I mean, it's likely that if we're in the situation that we need these gardens, you're pretty busy. So yes. You're not going to be wanting to spend tons and tons of time to baby this one plant that's going to give you one meal.
And I think we might even mention a few things that are maybe not the most productive things, but I think they're beneficial because of the nutrition aspect that they'll give you. And I'm going to mention a couple. I think they're like that.
Yeah.
They might be worth it, but so there's a balance there as well.
Weigh the calories. And that's why I was saying as much as I love lettuce, lettuce isn't a calorie dense food.
Right.
That said, certain kinds of lettuce and in certain times of the year grows pretty prolifically. Yeah. So,
but there are some other greens that grow just as prolifically that have more nutritional value than lettuce. So we can talk about those. So so definitely something like that. Calorie output really is calorie and nutrition output. Some will be more heavy on calories, some more on nutrition, but you need both. You need a good combination of both. You need a lot of calories and you're going to need a lot of nutrition from your garden.
Pest resistant. We kind of talked about that already.
Yeah,
it's
we
gonna
did.
Be a huge thing. Yeah.
And some things are more resistant than others naturally. There's just some things that don't get attacked by bugs all that much. I can tell you that squash bugs are bad and they love my yellow squash. They tear them up.
Squash bugs, potato beetles. Oh my word. It's like a constant battle. Yep.
Yeah, there's just some things that there's some worms or some things that are just going to like they just love certain things. It doesn't mean you can't grow those things. It just means you might have to pay more attention to those things. And, you know, it just, again, how much work are they going to take to control those pests? Disease resistance is important too. Here is where I get a little bit, if I'm really focusing on, a survival garden. Now there's two ways to look at this. Okay. I think about heirlooms and hybrids.
Yeah. Now, I know what you're going to say.
They both have a really important part in survival garden because now heirloom, I have the survival aspect of the seeds. I can save seeds from that garden and replant it, but hybrids can give me some protection against things like blight and other diseases with some hybrids.
Downy mildew that you get. Yep.
I definitely will plant both. I will definitely have some heirlooms and some hybrids, especially when it comes to things like tomatoes and things like that. I will get into the hybrid areas because I am thinking about resistance of diseases. So again, I try to plan my garden out by taking both of those things in consideration. I do save seeds and I want to be able to, you know, plant those seeds the next year. But I also want this guarantee of some things that are going to hold up through a blight or something, you know?
And that's what a hybrid can offer. You know, when you look through your seed catalogs, which I got, I'm trying not to order more seeds because I have enough, but I got a Johnny catalog in the mail yesterday and it's calling to me to look through it. But, you know, those catalogs, Johnny's has both and it will tell you what it's resistant to.
Yeah.
And it can be really, really helpful. That does not mean a hybrid plant is something that was bred to, it was bred to be resistant. It does not mean it's genetically modified. It's just, it's hybridized. Yeah. So there is a difference, but the heirloom varieties, you can save the seeds from so easily.
But a lot of them
are prone to certain diseases. Like
there are some heirlooms that are less prone to certain diseases too. You can search those out. I mean, we're going to talk about potatoes. I mean, potatoes are really prone to blight, but there are some varieties that are more resilient to that. So you would want to maybe search those out for a survival garden.
Yeah. Yep. So, anyways, you might want to be storing some seeds for both of those.
Yeah. I'm big on perennials. I mean, as a permaculture person, I love perennials. We think about annual gardens, but you know, if you can plant something that's just going to grow back the next year and keep providing food for you, wow, that's a win. You know, and we're going to talk about at least one that's definitely something that can give you a lot of calories. That's going to come back probably more than you want it to. And I love that. But you can also consider if you have like maybe in a more open area, self-seeding annuals. things that will especially with herbs and things like that, they will continue to just drop seed and replant and come back every year. And that's great too. I love that.
Yeah, because they're not technically perennials, but they self-seed themselves every year.
Yep. And I have several of those things on this property that do that. And a lot of them are more herbs and medicinal things and even culinary herbs, but definitely things can do that. Honestly, I do that with cherry tomatoes, believe it or not.
Do you really with your cherry
tomatoes? I have a bed that I just let several of the cherry tomatoes drop. I leave them alone. I will add a little bit of compost to that bed every year. And every year it fills up with cherry tomatoes every year.
It's funny you say that because last year when I was pulling plants, I had some tomatoes that, of course, I wasn't going to use them. So I looked around and said, where haven't I planted tomatoes in a while? And I threw the tomato over there.
It'll do it. It'll absolutely do it. There's always a bunch of cherry tomatoes that just drop. And I just let a few of them lay there. You know, if they're rotten, I just leave them lay, you know, and then they'll just, and I'll, like I said, in the fall, I'll add a little compost to that bed, put it to bed for the winter. And guess what grows really thick there the next year? Cherry tomatoes every year, that same bed. Yep. And it works great. And I mean, we didn't add that to our list of vegetables. We can. I think it's a very prolific plant. I think it puts tomatoes are loaded with vitamin C and antioxidants and all kinds of beneficial things. They're really nutritious. It's a great one. And like I said, it wasn't even in our list that we had down there. I think it's a great one. I think it's one we can definitely put in there.
And you can also put things on that list that just, to me, things that are super easy to store. So sun-dried tomatoes or dried tomatoes are so easy to store. And you can store them for quite a while. You just vacuum seal them into a bag or into a jar when they're dry. And they're like candy.
They freeze good. I mean, they're just so versatile.
To store. And you don't have to have special equipment to store them if you don't have it.
Yeah. And you know,
and they add flavor.
And if you don't want to put full size tomatoes in your list, cherry tomatoes do all the same stuff. It's just smaller. They come in a smaller package. That's all.
I like to do we always grow the yellow pear tomatoes.
Yeah, those are good. Yeah.
They're like little candy. And I dry those. I dry so many of them.
Grow these. The name is just large cherry tomatoes. That's all they call it. It's called large cherry. And I'm going to tell you what, these things, I've bought the seeds 8 years ago, I think. And, and I just, like I said, every year, they just replant themselves.
Are those indeterminate?
Yes, they're indeterminate. They vine out. I mean, they go crazy. They go literally, they turn into a jungle of tomato plants.
They get like 6 or 7 feet tall and there's so many tomatoes.
Yeah, you can't even get to them in there. It gets so thick. I mean, I can't even reach it. And it's like, I have to tie a string around one of my grandkids and send them in and pull them out when they're done.
Yeah, exactly. That's what these get. I have to trellis them. They're just crazy. They go wild.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are just some of the things to consider when you're considering what to grow, because I feel like that's important. When you're thinking survival garden, you're thinking, okay, I got to be able to store it. I got to be able, it's got to provide for me. It's got to meet my caloric and nutritional needs. You know, I should be able to save some of the seeds for the next year if I can't buy seeds. Should have some resistance. I mean, all these things should be considered. And it's not really that hard. Like I said, seed catalogs have made it fairly easy for us.
Oh, yes. Well, so, and some of these seed catalogs, like Johnny's, have so much information in them. Even if you don't think you would order from them, the information that is there about, you know, varieties and growing and everything is definitely worth it.
Well, you dropped a Johnny Seed link in for the next thing we're talking about on how to determine how much to grow, because this is a really important thing to consider when considering your survival garden. Because if it's a survival garden, you need to grow enough to meet your needs, right? So how much do you need to grow? You want to talk about that link you dropped in?
Yeah, the link that I dropped in, it's hard to know how much to grow because it really depends. I mean, you're going to eat more fruit, vegetables, and meat if you don't eat any grain. And so it really, really depends on what you eat. But the Johnny's actually has a really nice table on their website that talks about, for example, it starts with bush beans and it says 100-foot row is 800 seeds and it will grow 45 pounds of beans. So
that's good information.
It's just kind of nice. It's really good information. And they have this list is quite long. It has lots and lots of vegetables on there, and it just tells you how many seeds you need per 100-foot row, and how much pounds of food that's going to put out. And you can find some, you can find these charts other places too. It was interesting that I saw, it was funny. You know how the internet is, and maybe it was just Facebook. Once you click on something like that, then suddenly it started showing up on Facebook for a couple of other places that had something like that. So there's a few of those out there, but that's kind of how you know. And then keeping track of what you eat. I mean, you're not going to grow beans if you don't eat them.
Yeah. I'll also mention a book that I found pretty handy. It was by Melissa K. Norris. It's called The Family Garden Plan, Grow a Year's Worth of Sustainable and Healthy Food. And it's a good book. Helps you. It's a good book for helping you kind of plan out how much you need for your family on what you're growing. So it's called The Family Garden Plan. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes so you can check that out. And it even has a planner. There's a book, and then there's a planner she has. That has like worksheets and stuff in it. So I'll put links to all that in the show notes. But yeah, I find that to be I thought it was really good, you know, just kind of helped me determine on a few things what I wanted to grow and how much I wanted to grow something. Yeah. There's lots of tools helpful out there like that. Now we can jump into our list of survival garden crops because, hey, that's why the people are here. What do I need to be growing? I mean, if I'm going to grow a survival garden, I mean, what is it? And I think the first three we have are going to be really super obvious.
Right.
Yep. So go ahead and start with the first one.
Potatoes. I mean, almost everybody eats potatoes, and that's why I have them on here. Plus they have, you know, they're loaded full of potassium and magnesium. They have calories and they're fairly easy to grow. Yes. There's some pest issues with them, but
And then
on top of it, they also store for a decent amount of time, even if you don't have a root cellar, but you can them or freeze them. And the ones that store the longest are like the Burbank, russet, the Kennebec.
Yeah.
But I put a link in the show notes. It was to one of the Oregon State. They had a list of the ones that actually store the longest.
Yeah.
Which is
we did a whole podcast on potatoes not too long ago, yep. I think. So we can maybe drop a link in for folks and go back and listen to that podcast episode, what we done on growing potatoes. So I thought it was helpful. And yeah, potatoes are a great one. And there's 101 ways you can cook them that are delicious, which I think is important.
Yeah. I mean, hash browns and fries and baked potatoes and stuff,
adding them into dishes and just so many ways to use them. I mean, so many ways. There's just such a, and you know, I've had bad years of potatoes. I've had great years of potatoes. A great year and you will have so many potatoes. You won't know what to do with them.
That was me. I think that was 2020. We had so many potatoes. It was insane how many potatoes. Last year for me was not a great year.
I had 2 years in a row where I haven't had a great year. I had the best year. So
I didn't have potato beetles and I didn't have a disease, but I had the little wireworms.
I think it was more of a rain. It's like we got a lot of rain, then we got no rain. We had that big drought. And I think it was just that affected my potatoes and how big they got. They just didn't get real big. They didn't grow well. Yeah. They just didn't have great years the last couple of years.
I had pests. I actually had, I think they're like basically mealworms.
Okay.
Digging through mine. I had lots of them, but they all had little mealworms in them. So
I actually think the second one is a better option for a survival garden. And for a few
harder reasons. Where I'm at, they're a lot more work,
sweet potatoes are awesome. I think they are definitely mid United States South, way better than the upper. Yeah. Probably regular potatoes are better for up there. But I think if you can grow sweet potatoes well, they're probably, in my opinion, the best survival plant.
And they store so easy.
They store excellent. They don't have a lot of pest or disease issues. You can eat the leaves and the actual potato, which is not technically a potato. And they're delicious. You can cook them a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. Very nutritious, high calories.
Yep.
Just all around great. The way they the way they grow and the way they can provide for you. And I mean, you can just cover an entire area with them. The greens just take over and go everywhere.
I grew them 1 year, and it's a lot of work to grow them up here, but I grew them 1 year. And I tell you, I just dug and dug. They are prolific.
They are. Yeah. They can be, depending on where you know, like I said, the further south you go, they even do a little bit better, and they're just amazing. So they are a great plant to grow. And like I said, it's storing. They store so good. And I prefer eating regular potatoes more than sweet potatoes. I actually like the taste better of regular potatoes than sweet potatoes. But for the benefits that you get out of them, they are so worth growing for the survival garden aspect. So,
well, and you can, the nice part about sweet potatoes is, and it's the same thing. There's a little bit more work involved. You have to get your slips to grow, but it's similar to regular potatoes where you can save that potato and that can be your seed for the next year.
Yeah. I literally, though, I've left some in the ground and just let them come back and don't even, I didn't even harvest the potatoes. I just ate the leaves and I just kept letting them come back, and they just keep coming back thicker and thicker.
Really?
And more. Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, they did really well. They'll just keep on coming back.
Yeah. See if that would actually happen here, because a lot of stuff that you can do that with other places, you can't do that with here because our ground freezes so deep.
Yeah, I would say I did mulch them heavily, and the soil is super, super soft and loose, and lots of mulch on them. But come right back. I mean, they did really, really well doing that. I just, like I said, I just used the leaves for a couple of years, didn't even eat the potatoes, and they were just kept coming back.
The leaves are good too.
Yeah, leaves are really good, and they're really nutritious as well. On to the next one is squash, specifically winter squash. And reason winter squash is better than summer squash. Summer squash are delicious, but winter squash store so good.
Well, and they're calorie dense.
Yes, very calorie dense. They store real well. They are actually more resistant to disease and pests than summer squash.
Yeah.
My summer squash get decimated by disease, but you know, you got powdery mildew with the disease. You get the squash bugs. They'll say it's just like everything wants to kill your summer squash.
Vine borers.
Yeah. They all want to tear it. Now they will get you winter squash as well.
Oh yeah.
They are a little bit more resilient for sure.
Yeah. And you just have so much more, there's a lot more calories there. And then, like you said, I mean, I think I just used the last of my winter squash 2 weeks ago. I mean,
which ones do you grow?
We like butternut, acorn, and I like the spaghetti squash.
Spaghetti squash. Yeah, I grow all three of those. Yeah. And those are probably my three. My acorn and butternut especially are definitely go-tos.
Butternut's amazing.
Yeah, I love butternut. I mean, it's my favorite.
Yeah, and you can store that almost all winter.
Yeah, I've had it last for 8-9 months. Yeah. Using it up and still good. Yeah. Every once in a while, you got to keep an eye on it though. You get one that starts going bad, you got to either use it up quick, get it away from the other ones, because it'll definitely off gas and start making the others go bad with off gassing and stuff. Cause that'll actually speed up the process of them decaying. So you want to watch that. But yeah, winter squash is kind of a no brainer. Get you some acorn, some butternut, some others. There's some others. I can't even think of all the ones, but there's some good ones out there.
There's so many.
There's some that are really big too. Yeah, like really big ones.
Hubbard squash.
Hubbard, yes.
Yeah.
Gigantic. And then that would provide a lot of food for you. To me, though, I do mostly butternut because of the taste. I just love the taste. And so that's why I like them. But yeah.
Yep.
There's some good ones out there. Moving on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Carrots, beets, turnips, cabbage. I put these on the list because, again, they store very long time. The cabbage is in a tuber, but
I was going to say, it's kind of weird. Interesting. You threw cabbage in with three root vegetables.
Well, I put them in there because you can store them all similarly in like a root cellar or in an extra refrigerator. But the carrots, the beets and turnips are all root vegetables. And they have lots of minerals in them. They have lots of calories, and maybe not the turnips as much, but the carrots and the beets do.
I would definitely, if I had to pick one of those, beets, hands down. Beets.
Yeah.
So nutritious. So plus you can eat the greens,
the tops. Yep.
Yeah. The greens as far as in the root, they can get really big. They can put a lot of food in it. They store really well. Beets are a win for me.
Yeah. And the cabbage. So the reason I put cabbage on here is because, you know, we're talking survival garden here, and cabbage, once you ferment it into sauerkraut, has a pretty good amount of vitamin C in it.
Yeah.
And it has, it's so super good for your gut. I mean, any of these actually you could actually ferment and be good for your gut too. But cabbage can also hold for quite a long time. It stores for a really long time.
Yeah. And you know, I actually, for the first time last year, I froze some. Now there's certain things you don't want to use it for after you freeze it, but there's certain things you can do with it. It works really, really well. But as far as cooking with it and stuff, it still does great. It doesn't make good. It doesn't make good sauerkraut after you freeze it. I tried that and it just
nasty.
Not good. It just mushy mess. Yeah. It doesn't come out good. But yeah, it stores really well. Like you say, you store it like regularly, or you can wrap it and store it in cold storage, or you can, you know, freeze it. You can it, after you ferment it. Yeah. You really well, do really good stuff with it. Now, you have more experience with corn than I do.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even call myself an expert. I mean, we have, there's people that just, they go really deep and dive into corn pretty deeply, but I have grown specifically, I've grown a lot of dry corn to grow for.
Yeah, I've definitely grown more sweet corn.
Yeah.
To freeze and eat, you know, I'll freeze it and we'll eat it year round like that. But, yeah, I haven't done as much with dry corn, but
yeah. And the reason I put that on there is because it is a grain that you can make some bread out of, and corn is, I would say, the easiest grain to grow and process yourself without special equipment, because you just grow it, you let it dry, and you pull it off the cob. Where if you're growing other grains, you have to separate the, you know, they call it the wheat from the chaff. And it's a much more of a process, where with corn, you grow it just like you grow sweet corn. You just don't pick it and you let it dry out. And it's just, that's it. And there are some varieties that have a lot more protein in them. And if you're growing, say where Harold and I are, and you're in a suburban setting and you don't have animals, you might want to think about growing some of these. You might be wanting to think about growing some plants and vegetables that have higher protein content. And one of those breeds is the Hopi Blue. has a pretty high, it has the highest protein content of all the dried corn. So, and of course, some of that will depend on your soil and stuff too, but yeah, there's a couple of breeds that have a higher protein content, and Trueleaf Market sells that. There's a couple other places that sell that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Breed, but, and it's easy to store. Once that corn is dry, you just put that in a mason jar, and
you can even use that little vacuum sealer you talked about earlier.
You can use that little vacuum sealer. You have your seed for next year, and you have your cornmeal.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I think corn's a great one. I will throw another grain in the mix. Okay. Put notes here. Amaranth. Okay. Amaranth provides a lot of grain. Like each plant, I think, produces about a pound of grain.
I want to try growing. It's
very prolific, very healthy, very nutritious. And it, if you're going to pick a couple grains, yeah, corn and amaranth might be, if you don't want corn, amaranth might be one to go with, because it's definitely produces heavily as far as grains go.
Have you grown that?
I have, a small scale. Just, I haven't done enough to really store grain, you know, do anything really heavy with it. But yeah, I've grown a few plants just to play around with it. Yeah. Cool. And it does provide a lot. It is a lot.
I actually use amaranth flour in my gluten-free cooking. Mm-hmm. So you saying that is triggering me that I need to buy some seeds and try.
It does really well. And as far as where it grows best, if I don't know, I've grown it here. It seemed to do really, really well. Okay. I don't know how it would do up in your area, but yeah, I might do some research in that, but it's, I found it really beneficial. It's one I would definitely throw in the mix. If I want to grow a grain, and maybe corn's not the one, because there is a difficulty with corn, and that's with pollinating corn. If you're in a small area, you want to grow as big of a patch of it as you can together, so it can pollinate, or you got to get out and pollinate it. It's a heavy feeder. So there is some things about corn that make it a little more difficult, especially if you're dealing with smaller gardens. But I think it is, out of those two, I would definitely pick corn if I can grow corn, just because it's easier to have mass production of it, you know, to get a lot of it. But amaranth would be my second choice for a grain if I was really wanting a grain.
And amaranth might actually doesn't have that recognizability. Like we were talking about concealment.
Yeah.
People would just see that as a flower, and they wouldn't even Yeah, they wouldn't even
you could blend that in with landscaping. It's really pretty. Yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty.
That takes us to one that probably everybody would think of is beans. I think beans are definitely one you have to put on the list. For me, if I'm limited, I'm going with pole beans because pole beans are just so prolific. I mean, you just produce so much. You grow up and it just produces so much. I mean, I know when I grow like a lot of beans, I go out and just walk around and fill like baskets up just daily. Because every day it's just putting out more and more and more, and you can just keep going out there and just keep grabbing it. And they store so well. They freeze really good. They can really easy.
They do.
Just there's so much you can do. And a lot of nutrition there. It's just a great one to grow.
Yeah, there is.
But bush beans have their place as well. But I just think if you're looking for a lot to have a lot of beans, I find that pole beans do outproduce bush beans.
Especially in a small garden, you can trellis them.
Mm-hmm. You have any other thoughts on I have dry beans on here.
Which I've grown the black ones, black beans and kidney beans, and last year I grew peanuts. Which is technically a bean, it's not a nut, but I just like the idea because again the storability, the calorie dense
is density. It a bean? I thought it was a tuber.
It's technically a legume.
Okay.
But legumes have, I think, a few different families.
Okay.
Because lentils are a legume too, but they're in a different
part
of the family as beans. But because I also put lentils on there, and lentils are just a little bit easier for people that don't do well with dry beans.
Mm-hmm.
Lentils digest a little bit better. They don't cook as long. So if we're talking about, you know, a survivability, we're talking about a survival garden. Lentils don't need as much water and don't need to be cooked as long. So that's something to consider. But dry beans are as easy as growing any other bean. You just like I said with the corn, you just let them dry. Let them dry.
I just find the harvesting process a little tedious.
So what we do, and the kids used to love doing this, is what we do is we let them grow and dry. The bad part is if you're doing succession planting like you and I both do, you lose that spot for succession planting.
Yeah, same with the
corn. Yeah, because you got to let them sit there and dry. But we would just pick them. Once they were dry, we would pick them and just set them aside until a time like right now in the middle of winter when it's cold. And we'd sit and watch movies and do the corn and the beans.
The beans, huh? Yeah.
Yep,
it's why I don't do peas that much either. I'll do a few. I love peas. Peas are one of my favorite.
Oh, they're so good.
Vegetables.
But they are a pain.
Yeah, harvesting, getting them out of the shells. Oh my goodness, it's so much work.
They're great if you're growing just enough to eat while you're walking around the garden. But if you want to like freeze them, no.
Yes, right, exactly. So yeah, they're a lot of work. So that is, I avoid things that are too much work sometimes.
Yeah, and well, the other reason I put lentils and beans on here, dry beans and lentils on here, is again the protein thing. You're going to need some protein. And the dry beans and lentils have protein. Lentils have a little bit more than regular dry beans. So that's why I put them on here.
You also added sunflowers, especially the mammoth sunflowers, because there is a lot of seeds there. And now I've even got an extra little thing with that now, because now I got that oil press, so I can actually take those and make oil, which is another benefit to having those. But yeah, I think there's a lot there for the fat and the calories that you pointed out. Yeah, it's a great one. Very prolific. Nice to look at. Fun to grow. I mean, they're great to grow. I mean, I think it's definitely a plant for the win to have in your survival garden for sure.
Yeah. And you get the biomass out of that if you chip it down, and that's kind of nice. So yeah.
Makes a great feed for chickens and stuff too as well. I mean, you could actually take heads of that, and if you have livestock, you want to think about growing survival garden for them to feed them. I mean, it might be a thing to consider there. They'll eat that stuff too, and it's really good for that because it's so prolific. You're going to get a lot of it, and it does provide an extra feed for them, a bonus food.
So for sure,
something to consider there as well. Garlic and onions made the list. I wouldn't have put them on the list, but you did.
You don't think so? I did because
I think they're great to have. Yeah, I don't know if I would put them on the list.
I think great for flavor. The garlic, I I almost didn't add the onion. Let's say that because I love onion and I love the flavor and we eat it every day. But in a survival garden, I wasn't so sure. So that's why I put the walking onions in there.
Walking onions, yes.
You don't have to do anything. They just keep showing up. Yep. But the reason I put garlic in there is because it's so medicinal.
Yes, that's a good point.
It's antibacterial. Yeah. It's, you know, you can use it almost like an antibiotic. I'm not giving medical advice. But yeah, I mean, so that's why I put it. It's just so medicinal.
Yeah, I love growing it. And I think it's great. Yeah, and it's the easiest too. Yeah. I mean, I saw success. You want to feel successful in your garden, grow some garlic. I mean, it's so easy to grow.
Or toss some walking onions in there. You'll never have to plant onions again. I mean, they just keep coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so yeah, I get why they're there. I just, I was thinking about, I was thinking more like on the nutrition side of, calories and nutrition and eating something you can eat a lot of. I'm not gonna eat a lot of garlic. I might eat a lot of onions. I mean, you put onions about everything. I do that. But yeah, definitely. I see where they could have a place in your survival garden for sure. Next you put in here medicinal herbs. And I do think it's important to have a lot of herbs. You mentioned a bunch here, which I'll let you kind of go through your list, but I think, yeah, at least have a few, because one, they're super easy. I also think they can bring a lot of success to the rest of your garden by interplanting them, which is
for sure
good. So I think they're worth having for that. A lot of them are perennials.
Just the flavor.
And to add some life to your life. You want some flavor because, in your cooking.
You know, if we end up, if you're planting this for a survival garden, sometimes you just need something for your mental stability, and having a nice peppermint tea or a chamomile tea makes life a little enjoyable.
Yep.
But they do also have, you know, medicinal qualities. And that's why I tried to think of the more common ones. I have some pretty wild ones in my garden, but I was thinking of some of the more common ones, like oregano. You can use it to cook with, but it's also medicinal. And peppermint, chamomile, echinacea, lavender, calendula. Did I say that right?
Calendula. Sage. I would say calendula. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Sage, basil, ginger, which up here is a little bit harder to grow, but I usually grow it in pots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hyssop, cilantro. I don't know. I was just thinking of all the ones that are more common that you cook with, but they also have some medicinal qualities. I mean, peppermint is great if you have a bellyache. Lavender can help you relax and go to sleep. And, you know, calendula is really good if you have something going on with your skin.
And a lot of these are either perennial or self-seeding. You know, you're going to have a constant supply from there on out once you plant it once. So that's good.
Yeah.
Definitely can have a place in your garden. I mean, there's so many benefits to growing herbs. That you should definitely have some. It isn't going to be like something like heavy on calories or anything like that, it definitely has a purpose in a survival garden for sure.
Yeah. And you can use them for teas and tinctures and, like you said, interplanting them in the garden. You know, they collect pollinators, which definitely are important.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
I like your side note on the next one you entered here. Sunchokes made the list. That's Jerusalem artichokes, or some people call them fart chokes.
That's why the LOL after those.
Yeah, so there's a little side note there. And what I love about them is you plant some and you're always going to have some. Always and forever. Heavy, they're a lot of calories. So they are really considered probably kind of like I would consider sweet potatoes in that group. I think you almost have to consider sunchokes in that group too as a definite have to survival crop. There's something that, like, you plant some of it, you can't control it. It's going to go crazy. Yeah. It's hard to control, but it's one of them foods that you're always going to have food if you have them. They are just dig them up when you want them.
And some animals can eat them, like your pigs and stuff will eat them. And they have that concealment. I mean, most people are just going to walk by and say, look at that pretty sunflower, because they kind of look like a small fun sunflower on the top. They're not going to realize that there's this whole crop underneath that.
Yeah. And you just leave some in the ground and they just keep coming back, and you don't really even have to intentionally leave some in the ground. You're going to leave some in the ground and they're going to come back.
Trust me. So I think
you're not going to get them all.
You're not going to get them all. You can try.
you're going to try and you still can't. So and it's just tons. I mean, a lot of food. I mean, if you got a nice old crop of those, you got a lot of food there, and you, can use them in the same way you use potatoes for a lot of things and cook them that way. And they do can cause
just an some, after effect. Yes.
Yeah. They can produce some gas and they, a little bit of stomach distress if you eat a lot of them. So, and depending on how you cook them and, you know,
yeah, I've heard
I have had them fermented. Yeah. It does seem to ease it, okay. Stop it. But, yeah, I mean, there's ways you can.
And I've also read that it's the inulin that is in them. It's like the same thing that's in chicory. And I've also read that, the more you eat it, your body kind of adjusts to it.
Yeah. So I think they taste great. And like I said, using them like potatoes in a lot of ways, just cooking them like that, I think they work great. I mean, they taste great. So they're a really good crop. But yeah, I think that's one worth having. I used to grow a lot of them and then I built my rabbit pen over where I used to grow them and they stopped producing because there's probably some still in the ground back there.
You actually found some?
Well, yeah, because I built a roof over them so they couldn't get no sunlight. So basically they just stopped coming back up, right? So, I mean, I built a building over the top of them basically where I had them. And okay. I actually just got them again this year from Jordy. Hooked me up with some at the conference. So I actually planted them as soon as I got home. So they'll be popping up next year, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, they won't. They'll come back.
Yeah. So I'm glad to have those. Keeps again.
Giving.
Yeah. You added one on here I wasn't thinking about, but I think it's absolutely a great one, and that's rhubarb. I think rhubarb is. I mean, you're always going to have it. It produces a huge plant. Lots of nutrition. Yeah. It's a great one to have for sure.
The stems are what you eat with a rhubarb and they have lots of nutrition and you can add those to like, if you have strawberries or other berries, you can make, just kind of adds flavor to some jams and stuff, but you can use the leaves as a pesticide.
Yeah. You told me that before. Yeah. I've never done that, but I think it's great. Yeah.
And that's when I was thinking, I mean, as much as I love peppers, that's one of the other reasons for growing hot peppers, like the hottest peppers you can grow. Even if you don't eat them, you can make a great pesticide or a rabbit deterrent growing hot peppers and using it as a.
Peppers for me are one of them really prolific crops too. I can produce so, I mean, they grow so good here. I don't know.
I love them. I love them.
I mean, it's probably the thing I end up throwing the most of away because I always plant more than I need because I just love growing them. And then I have so much, I don't even know what to do with it all. I try giving them away and I can't even give them enough of them away because there's so much.
I would like to have more sweet peppers. We are not big on the hot peppers and the sweet peppers are the ones I struggle a little bit more to get.
Well, like the bell peppers and stuff, you don't get as many per plant either.
Right.
So we like those, but like the sweet peppers, the long sweet peppers, those seem to grow really, really well here. Do really good with those, but like the jalapenos and things like that, just so many of them I can't even use them all because I'm not a big hot pepper. I eat some, but I don't eat enough to keep up with how much I plant. I always plant way more than I need for some reason. I don't know why.
You really only need, if you don't eat a lot of them, you really only need like one plant.
One or two.
They produce a lot and we're just not big on them, but I started using them as we have a rabbit problem, so I started using them to keep rabbits at bay. Mm-hmm. And you know, other, and
you find it like working deer, really well.
It works fair.
Yeah.
Not as good as a really good fence, but our rabbits are smart and they somehow get in the garden. Yeah. So.
Well, you made rhubarb. When you mentioned rhubarb there, it made me think that's my favorite pie. I love rhubarb pie.
Really?
Love it. It's my favorite pie.
Our favorite jam is strawberry rhubarb jam.
Yep. It's a great jam. Yeah. Yep. For sure. Yep. I was surprised that you added my favorite plant overall to the list, because I wouldn't have put it in there for a survival plant at all, but it is probably my favorite plant in my garden.
Yeah, I added comfrey because I felt like we're growing all this stuff. Shouldn't we be growing some food for all this stuff? And to me, comfrey is fertilizer for our gardens, and it's medicinal for us and for our plants. And then it's biomass. So you just kind of chop and drop. Mm-hmm. And I know you've been making your teas and stuff,
but it's also food for some livestock too.
I feel like comfrey deserves its own little spot.
Yeah, it's a good one to put in there. I wouldn't have thought of it, but I think it's definitely one. I'm going to mention a couple more that didn't on the list on here, but
didn't make my list.
I didn't get in here and do a lot of editing, so I guess I just remembered them. I actually mentioned one earlier, the cherry tomatoes. I think cherry tomatoes, because of their self-seeding abilities, because of how prolific they are, because of the nutrition they can add, I actually pick them over full-size tomatoes just because they have less blight issues. They have less growing issues, pest issues, all those things. They just do so. You can't stop them. They keep producing and keep producing until they freeze out. And they just, they're kind of amazing on how well they do. But a good variety of cherry tomatoes. But I would also add chard to the list. I think chard has a lot of nutritional value. It is bulletproof when it comes to pests. You have experienced
that nutritional value this year.
Yeah, and just every, all the benefits of it. The huge, huge leaves it produces. There's a lot of food. Of course, when you cook them, they shrivel down to nothing. But, you know, they produce this really giant leaf. You can do so much with it. It's not even my favorite flavored food to eat.
Oh, really? I love it.
I like it. Love it. But I don't, it's not, I would rather eat lettuce. I would rather eat spinach. But really?
I'd
kale,
rather have chard than those two.
But I like it better than kale, though.
Yeah.
And because of the size of the leaves and how easy it is to grow and how it just seems to grow no matter what. And I will kick the snow off of it and eat it.
Well, it doesn't mind the cold. It doesn't mind the
there's
heat.
A point.
It doesn't. Yes. Yep.
It gets below zero, it's dead. But if it's in the 20s, it's still going and you can kick the snow off of it and eat it. It's kind of amazing. Yeah.
And it tolerates the heat in the summer. It's pretty crazy. It does grow no matter what, basically.
Yeah. And you can store it. You can ferment it. You can freeze it, I think. I think people freeze
it. I've dehydrated it too.
You've dehydrated it. You can dehydrate it. Mm-hmm. I know I fermented some to try it fermented to see how it was. It's okay. It's all right. I think it does pretty good. I like it. I think it's one that's, if you're going to grow a green, which I think having a green could be really important. I think it'd be the one I would add to the list. Now, some people I think would pick maybe collards. If you're down south, you might go with collards. It might even grow better down there. I don't know. And that's a really good nutritious one as well. Kale is an option. If you like kale better than chard, you can go with kale.
Yeah.
Kale is really prolific. It grows really good.
Well, chard has a lot of potassium, which you need quite a bit of.
I love the potassium benefits of it for blood pressure issues. But I think pick a green. I would pick a green, whether it be chard, kale, or collards. I would pick one of those three, or if there's another one, maybe you can think of, but I would probably try to pick a green that grows really well in your zone and have a really good growing green as well. Yep. I would avoid lettuce just because you can't store it.
And I think
as far as survival garden goes,
I think chard, if you picked a rainbow chard, say, and you lived in one of those neighborhoods that you needed concealment because of an HOA or for some reason, I think you could almost put a rainbow chard out there and people wouldn't recognize it as food. No,
it's a beautiful plant.
It'd just be pretty.
It grows really, really well. So I wanted to drop those couple in there because I think those would be beneficial in having in your garden. As far as, you know, wrapping this up, most of these things we talked about are going to harvest really well, store really well. Some take a little bit more work than others. Some just basically throw them in a cool spot and they're going to just store great. You're going to can, some you're going to dehydrate and freeze, whatever. But all these, I think, are things you can do that with fairly easily garden. So I think having a survival garden is a great idea. I think if it's not something that's maybe on your radar is the most important thing, it should be something you think about. It should be preparedness. Is just something we should all think about to some degree and at least plant some of these crops with the intention of growing enough to feed you if you, for some reason, couldn't get food any other way. So
for me, the ones I picked because of just the input to output, because it's a lot of work to do a garden and you want something that is going to give you those calories back in the situation that we're talking about, a survival garden. It's not that I don't love greens and tomatoes and peppers and all that kind of stuff, but the ones that we talked about, they just have a ton of calories or fat for the work that you put into it. So that's why we put them on this list.
Yep. Well, I think that wraps us up, folks. We hope you'll get out there and plan your garden and even plan a little bit of it to survive on if you have to. But enjoy the garden too and plant a thing or two that you just love to eat or that maybe didn't make the list, but you'll enjoy the flavors and enjoy it. And maybe you just want to experience something new. There's so many things you can grow and there's probably several things that could have made a survival garden list. These are just some things I think we think of because there's things we eat and we grow and we like.
Might change depending on where you live too. I mean,
if you
live somewhere else, you might have the opportunity to grow things that we just can't grow here.
Oh yeah. I'm sort of just thinking of things. If I lived down south, I would grow different things. Absolutely. Right. That maybe.
You know, the other thing I wanted to talk about, which we kind of brought up, was we have the book club, which is going to be meeting every other Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So that is coming up next Wednesday.
Yeah, we have three more sessions of that. It was just four. It was just broken down into four meetings.
It's really good. It was great last time. So
yeah, I thought it worked really well. And some great information in the book. We're doing Ben Falk's The Resilient Farm and Homestead.
Yep.
Great book. And I think it's one we're jumping into. If you can't make book club, pick that book up. It's a great read. And
it is a really good book.
I think I love doing the book club, especially because I love that you're really focusing on some in-depth parts of the book and thinking about them and how they apply to your homestead and things. I think it really helps when you're going through it with a group of people.
It's a little bit of
see things that you don't always see. Yeah.
We had such a great meeting and it was really interesting. We had people from not just the United States. So that was really fun.
Yeah, it was fun. So it's always great to have a lot of different viewpoints of where people are growing their gardens and how they're homesteading, where they're at and stuff. So that's fun to kind of see different takes on things. And maybe there's even things in that book that are somewhat controversial, which we brought up a couple things that maybe not everybody agreed with, which was great. I love that, you know, so it's fun to talk about those things in book club. So yeah, you can still jump in and join in on that if you have the book and you want to jump in and hear what folks are saying about it. So yep, we're doing that. And other than that, we'll see you in the Homestead Front Porch. You can find us on Patreon.
Or over in the membership area. Yeah. Or
you want to catch us for an extra half hour on these episodes, you can join those and get us for the pre-show. And until next time, happy homesteading. God bless.
And grow where you're planted.